And a good Monday morning to you, and welcome into Darren and Donick here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody had a great weekend. How could you not? The weather was fantastic. It was actually
for a couple hours yesterday.
Hot. Well, you're right. I know. I didn't even know that was coming.
I know. Can you believe my son's games got completely rained out yesterday?
I know. We had makeup.
It was like a 45-minute deluge.
Yeah, but it was heavy.
It was very heavy.
It was heavy. Our area, it was actually longer than that. But, yeah, there was evidently some makeup games. We had so many rainouts this year. We were not a part of it, but there were some teams that had some makeup games, and you're right, they called it in our league. And they hardly – it's like Vanderbilt. I mean, they hardly ever – it's hard to get rainouts at our place. Our fields are pretty good. But, obviously, Vanderbilt got off to – what did the rain delay end up being? Over two hours? Yeah.
Almost exactly 2 hours.
Yeah. Thanks, rain. I fell asleep. I gotta be totally honest. I fell asleep late. I didn't see the bad inning. Actually, I fell asleep at the right time.
Well,
after the 10, I fell asleep in the bad inning.
Well, let's just get this out there right now, because I know we'll talk about those games, but that was just a fantastic athletic event. Those three games.
The walk-off series?
That's
basically what it was.
I went from start to finish all three games. I was going to miss yesterday's game until the delay, and then because of my son's rainouts and the delay, we were able to get to the third game.
But you were clean-shaven when you showed up to the Hawk. Now you've got a Santa Claus beard.
And, you know, I'm already, you know, follically challenged, but I think I probably lost a little bit more hair over the weekend too. It was just every single half inning was intense, and you know, just sitting there in the stands, it's one of the best atmospheres in a game, because Mississippi State has great fans. It challenged the Vanderbilt fans to kind of protect their area, and so what you had was intense cheering for every out, and you had a series that was contested all the way through. Every time a team would push out, mostly Mississippi State, Vanderbilt would come back. And every time it looked like Vanderbilt could break through, Mississippi State would come back. It was just a heavyweight fight for three straight games.
You said it was chippy in the stands.
It was at times.
Well, when people start getting tossed and there's fights, that's chippy.
Yeah, there were some incidents.
At a college baseball game?
I'm not saying there was a lot. There was one here or there. For the most part, it was just great back and forth cheering.
But any of that is chippy. I mean, it's a college baseball game.
And honestly,
European soccer.
I wasn't out in the outfield, but the outfield looked like there was no sections. It wasn't like there was a Mississippi State section and then a Vanderbilt section. Like in the baseline area behind home plate, it was very clear there were several Vanderbilt sections, and then there were a couple of, you know, you had, I think, 500 official seats. So Mississippi State had their cluster of fans, and they were intense. I mean, they were tremendous.
Well,
but the outfield was a total mix, where I'm sure you were amongst the other team's fans, and they were sort of battling to be heard, both of them. But what it made for was one of the best, again, energy when you combine the drama on the field with the intensity of the fans. It was just amazing. It was amazing. I don't think I've ever seen a three-game series quite like that.
Well, they didn't show all 500 Mississippi State fans. I can tell you that. They basically showed the one kid's mom the whole time.
Oh.
And her group.
See, I have no perspective of the telecast.
That's all they showed. She was the one that they showed the entire game. Was it Magnum? Is that his name?
Mangum.
Mangum. That's all they showed was his mom and their group.
What a great player.
It looked like probably his girlfriend or his sister or something. But that's all. They didn't show the other 485 fans.
Well, there were more than 485, but
they just
had the section.
They were loud.
Yeah, they probably, I want to say they probably had 40% of the fans, but again, it was just spectacular. Spectacular for college baseball.
All right, let's just talk this out loud, because I got to be honest. I don't really understand what happened there, okay? And I thought, and hats off to Tim Corbin and Vanderbilt for coming back in the ninth, because if you had asked me to lay down a bet right there, I would have said game over. They're just not going to recover from this. It's just not going to happen. From what happened in the bottom of the eighth to what happened in the top of the ninth, and I just thought, they're done. They're just not going to recover from this. And they did. So hats off to them. But here's what I don't understand, because I had a different perspective than you did, because you're there, you're watching it live. I've got my own video room. Like I said, we've talked about this on the show. You realize we all have our own video rooms. We all have our own situation rooms. I had mine. And I stopped, start, paused, backed up. I looked at the play over and over and over again.
All right, let's set the stage for the situation. It's the bottom of the eighth. Bases loaded, two outs, 3-2 count on Connor Kizer. So the runners are going on the pitch. The game is tied 3-3. So if Vanderbilt takes the lead, all of a sudden they're three outs away from going to Omaha.
And who was on second?
Austin Martin.
The
freshman All-American who is, I think, their best player. I think he is going to be unbelievably good. But that's
although those
for down
three
the road.
Plays in the, what was it, the seventh or eighth inning, in like four pitches, those three plays were incredible.
I mean,
like,
this series
like
really.
Like Kizer's play at short was ridiculous.
This series had everything.
Okay,
so now here's
anyway,
the situation.
Back to that.
Connor Kizer chops the ball to third base. Immediately when he hits it, you're thinking he's got a chance to beat this out, and Vanderbilt's going to take the lead.
It's a high chopper,
but the runners are going on the pitch. So Austin Martin, who is on second, is running and barreling from second to third. The third baseman for Mississippi State, as he's about to field the ball, collides hard with Austin Martin. The umpire calls obstruction.
Immediately.
Emphatic call, and calls Austin Martin out, inning over.
Tim Corbin goes out to state his case. And quite honestly, I thought he had a case. Because here's what I don't understand, Willie. I know the rule. If we're going to do the letter of the law, the rules, all that, I get all that. But this is what I don't understand. What do you want Austin Martin to do? Because when I slowed it down, by the way, he was fully aware of what was going on. He was in the baseline. Okay, he sees the third baseman coming toward him. He actually stops for a second before they collided. He actually – it's not like he had his head down and was never paying attention and just bowled over the third baseman. Okay, when I stopped and paused and restarted, he was fully aware of the play. Now, was he tracking the ball, like we said, a high chopper, staying in the baseline, watching the third baseman, tracking the ball, and paying attention to where he's running? I mean, that's a lot to ask for a base runner. And to me, it's a little bit silly to ask that. So, okay, let's say he stops completely. He's so aware, which he was. He stopped briefly, and then they collided. Let's say he stops completely. There's no collision. Okay, the third baseman makes the play. Oh, by the way, he was not throwing out anybody at another
base. No,
he
had no play.
He
knew
he
had no
play. So Austin Martin stops, lets him field the ball. He makes the play. Then what? What happens right there? He tags him out. He's standing right next to him.
Well, that's one scenario that could have happened.
So to me, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. He stayed in the baseline. He tried to give the third baseman an opportunity to make the play, but I don't understand what he's supposed to do in that play. What is he supposed to do? Stop? Okay, you're out. That doesn't make any sense. That play makes no sense. He was aware. He gave him a little bit of space, and then they collided. It was very clear to me that the third baseman realized he had no play. I'm not saying that he intentionally tried to make that happen, but he also knew he didn't have a play. The only play was what happened. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what either one of them were supposed to be. To me, it's like the base runner can't get touched by the ball. He's got to stay in the base pad. He can't collide with the fielder. All the advantages go against the base runner. Why? That's the question I have.
Okay.
Why?
All right. This is my interpretation of the rule, is that the fielder has to have a chance to make a play on the ball. It's like the punt returner in football. You can't hit the punt returner before he has a chance to make the play. Now, even if it's incidental, even if it's unintentional, so it is the runner's responsibility to veer out of the way or stop. And that's just bad luck. It's tough luck on the runner. And so it was the worst case scenario for Vanderbilt because the runners are going on the pitch. If
but
he's
there
not
is
running
no halo
on the pitch.
Rule in baseball. Like in football, you have
no,
a halo
rule. There's no
rule.
Halo rule, but the,
you have,
the fielder
you
has
know
to have an
have
opportunity to,
have... to
field the ball. Now, if the ball is past the fielder, then that's a different thing. Like, you can have obstruction on the fielder, you know, to and the runner is deemed safe. But that's if but if the fielder has not had an opportunity to field the ball, then it's the runner's responsibility to get out of his way. Now, here's what I don't know. Is there a rule or an interpretation that the umpire has at his discretion that the fielder veered out of his path to intentionally make contact or initiate contact with the runner? I think that's what some people were saying. That I'm not sure what Tim Corbin was arguing, but I'm thinking that might be what he was asking, because I think the fielder knew he had no play at first, and so his only chance was to make contact with Austin Martin,
which is impossible to prove. Impossible.
You can't prove it.
We'll come back and can pick up this conversation. Peter Burns coming up at 11 o'clock, SEC Network. Certainly we'll ask him on his thoughts on the play. But Vanderbilt falls in 11 innings. Mississippi State punches their ticket into Omaha in the College World Series. Everything else is yet to be determined in the SEC. So they'll have game threes today, including Tennessee Tech in Texas today at noon. So we'll keep you posted on that during our show. That's down in Austin, Texas. That series tied up at one. We'll come back with more. Darren and Donick next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Dwayne Casey, he couldn't beat LeBron in the Cavs, so Toronto showed him the door. Detroit must feel pretty good about LeBron leaving the conference. Because if he couldn't beat him in Toronto with the Raptors' talent, I can't imagine that the Detroit Pistons think Dwayne Casey's going to beat LeBron. But they have signed him up for 5 years.
It's all relative, so right? The
Dwayne
Pistons
Casey,
haven't had a whole lot of
no.
success. They feel like they're getting better. But, you know, 45 to 50 wins sounds pretty good to Detroit fans, probably, right?
I would say yes. I would say they would sign up. Today's Pistons, yes, they would sign up right now. How do we get that?
They've shown signs of life, but they've been irrelevant for a while,
while. I mean, they made a big trade. They got Blake Griffin, so yeah. They've got some pieces, but they're still not anywhere near at the top. It's, you got the Raptors, you got the Celtics, you got, depending on what goes on with LeBron, you got the Wizards. I mean, you got good teams. I would put Bucks maybe on the rise a little bit. Maybe. So, I mean, where do the Pistons fit into all that? I mean, they're a playoff team, but what are they? Are they a serious playoff team right now? No.
This, again, illustrates the biggest problem of the NBA is that there is almost never a scenario where you go worst to first. You can name a worst to first
right.
in every in the, other
in
league.
Hockey,
football.
Yep.
Even baseball.
Yeah.
You can turn it around quick. Now, baseball usually takes a little longer, but basketball, it is almost impossible.
Rockies were in the playoffs last year, were they not?
Yeah.
What were they the year before? They were pretty bad, if I remember correctly.
Sure. It does happen. But in terms of hope for your fans, that's why so many NBA teams are forced to tank, because their only chance is to get the high elite draft picks. There's no other way. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you do about it, really, because they do have a salary cap.
They do. So Dwayne Casey is the new head coach of the Detroit Pistons. All right, back to our conversation of what happened last night at the Hawk. I understand you have to let the third baseman, you have to let the infielder make a play. I get it. But I still do not believe, if you watch that play, I don't know what Austin Martin is supposed to do.
Did you think that the third baseman initiated contact?
It's impossible for me to really – it's impossible for anybody to tell. Do I think there is a possibility that he knew he had no play, but other than that, yes. But is it –
then you take advantage of the rule.
Could you ever prove that he did that? No, you could not. It's just a play you can't prove. It's just – that happens in all sports, right? There are just certain plays, whether it's goalie interference. By the way, we didn't even talk about the goalie interference – in the Stanley Cup final. We didn't even get to all that because the Capitals won, which I thought on Holtby it was, and they didn't. But anyway, it's impossible to prove that. But I don't know what you want Austin Martin to do. No, I don't know what Tim Corbin's conversation was. We haven't talked to Tim Corbin since play. Did he address that after the game? I don't know. I didn't hear it.
I didn't hear his whole press conference. It was after 1 o'clock
right.
in the morning when I saw some clips, and everything I saw was just commending the magnitude of the game, the excitement of the game. I really would like to know what he saw, because my perspective, I actually was sitting behind third base, and so I had a very good view, a similar view of what the umpire would have seen. There's no question Austin Martin is just doing what you probably would do. You're already running full speed because you're stealing on the play. It's 3-2, two out.
Yeah,
so you're running.
Everybody's on the move.
So he's further down the line than he would have been, and so he's thinking about just getting directly to third as fast as he can. So it's just bad luck. When you say what is he supposed to do, I don't know that he could have done anything. I don't know if he could have slowed down or veered off, but it is – you have to make a – the rule is it's either the fielder has to give way or the runner has to give way, and because the ball has not had a chance to be fielded yet, it is the runner's responsibility. And I don't know if there's anything he could have done.
This is why the play doesn't make any sense to me, because let's say the only time it – well, no, he's probably going to get out. If the runner stops, really, in any situation, it wouldn't be just there was only a runner at second. But obviously if it's a force play. But even with that being said, without anybody else on the base pads when the play started, with only a guy at second where you would have to tag him out, rather than just touch a base or tag him out, he's going to be out. If he stops at that level, you've just given them an out because they're going to make the play.
If he jams on the brakes, then after the fielder fields the ball, then it's a race to third base.
Well,
you'd have to hope that you would win the race.
Either way, he's out. He's going to get out. He just is. They're going to make that play.
But he could also – the other options would be to veer in front of him. See if you can veer in front of him before the ball gets there. Or what I thought was the only option, maybe, if he could have stopped, would it be to veer behind him. But the third baseman didn't make it easy.
Willie,
he sort
I'm
of drifted
you,
towards
it's
him.
Right. It is impossible for the runner. Like I said, I slowed it down. I paused. It's impossible for the runner in live play to do what all these scenarios that are correct. For him to do, it's impossible because third baseman, remember, is coming in at an angle. So it's impossible. Do I go in front? It's like that awkward hallway moment, you know, where you're coming down the hallway with somebody else on the other end. And all of a sudden it's like
you go one way, the guy goes the same way.
And, you guys go the same way. And then you're like, oh, let's go the other way. And you both go the other way. And it just creates a really, really awkward moment. We've all done that. That's what's in play right there. I don't know if he goes in front, if he goes behind. I don't know if there was the right – how was he supposed to know what the third baseman – what was his path? The answer is it's impossible.
But I guess the bottom line
is – he can't know his path.
But here's the bottom line. Unless there is some rule that the fielder intentionally didn't go after the ball and instead initiated contact with the runner, and that's what I don't know, then it's the right call. It's terribly bad luck. Against Vanderbilt, terribly bad luck, but I don't know what else you call. If that were Vanderbilt's third baseman, and it was a Mississippi State runner coming in there, I think the Vanderbilt fans would have screamed that was the right call, right? I mean,
of course,
the third baseman has to have a chance to field the ball.
Look, it ultimately didn't. I take that back. Let me scrap that. I was going to say ultimately it cost them the game. It did not. What cost Vanderbilt the game is all the men they left on base. What did they end up leaving on? I lost count.
I think 16.
I mean,
16 or
17. You can't do that in a super regional. You can't leave that many men on. I mean, that's what ultimately lost them the game.
Huge. Just one big hit in any number of innings might have been enough.
We're talking about it because I'm trying to figure out what is the best way to – is the rule the right rule? Is that the best way to go about it? Like you just – The infielder always has all the advantages. Does the runner not get any advantage at all? Like, what advantage does the runner have? The answer is none. The runner has zero. So why? Why doesn't the runner have any advantage at all, and it's all slanted toward an infielder? Either way, whether it's Vanderbilt, whoever's the – why should the infielder have all the cards stacked in his favor?
Again, I go back to the punt returner. The punt returner has to focus on the ball. He can't focus on anything else. He has to have a chance to field the ball.
But like I said, there is a halo, there is a rule that says you have to do that. Like, you have to let him – you can't clobber him.
Right, and that's the rule in baseball. You can't hit
right,
the fielder.
But he didn't try – he didn't – actually, you can make the case it was just the opposite. The runner didn't make the contact. The infielder is the one who initiated the contact. So what is he supposed to do in that spot?
You have to – it's the runner's responsibility.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. All that you
it's
realize –
the runner's responsibility. Yeah, I don't know how else you would do the rule. I don't. That's just it's just baseball.
Okay, but I'm asking you now. You play Tim Corbin. Tim, what is Austin Martin supposed to do in that situation? What would you have liked to see? You're now Tim Corbin. I need answers. What is he supposed to do? How is he supposed to play out that scenario?
I don't know if he could have done anything different. He's running on the play. So he's already
so it's
full
just one
acceleration.
Of those freak plays?
It's a freak play. Okay. It's a freak play.
On a huge stage.
On a huge stage with at the worst possible time. Heartbreaking. Like there was a play earlier in the game which I thought might have been the second biggest play of the game. Is Vanderbilt's got a runner on with first base. Runner on first base, one out in a tie game, and Harrison Ray hits a bullet to center field, and who was it? I think Pat DeMarco is going from first to third. He's running on the play, and he gets thrown out of third base with one out on a brilliant throw by Mangum, who was a heck of a player, who somehow didn't get drafted. I have no idea why that guy is not going to play pro ball, but he gets thrown out of third on just a tremendous play, and everybody's saying, well, you know, how he should have stayed, everything like that. But when you're running and it's hit and run, it's a base hit, you got to go to third. And that sometimes you just got to tip your hat. It was just one of those things. That's what made the series great. There were so many plays like that. Great plays.
We had a Triple Crown winner. Yeah, we talked about it on Friday, and it happened. Justify got it done. We'll talk to Larry Comas from NBC Sports. We'll do that next on Darren and Donick, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
And they're into the stretch, and Justify comes roaring home to a raucous Belmont Park with one furlong to run. Gronkowski and Hofberg trying to run him down. Vito Rosso is fourth, a 16th to go. Justify is still there. Justify from Gronkowski. He's just perfect, and now he's just immortal. Justify is the 13th Triple Crown winner.
Love that call. Love it. I love the fact that we had a Triple Crown at stake and it happened. I don't know about you, Willie, but I made time to stop what I was doing to make sure that I watched that race. That's good for horse racing. That's good for business. Obviously, monster crowd there, the Belmont Stakes, but really, really cool to see Justify do it. We talked about it on Friday. Could he do it? We bring in Larry Comas, NBC Sports. Justify did it, Larry. We talked about it on Friday. We wanted it to happen, but if we're being honest, if we had to go back and play the tape on Friday, we didn't think he could do it. We thought we wanted him to do it, but we didn't think it was going to happen. We were wrong, thankfully. Welcome to the show. Thanks
yeah,
for joining us.
Absolutely. It's great to be on with you. But, you know, a lot of people had doubts, you know, because he had gone through so much in so little time, you know, having not started as a two-year-old, and then he ran those three big races, and then he wins the Derby and the Preakness, and a lot of people were saying, oh, man, he's just not going to have enough left, but he proved everybody wrong. He was sensational on Saturday.
When I hear all these examples to this horse, to, you know, to athletes in professional sports, you know, he's LeBron James. Obviously, he's a big, commanding presence. Never being around the horse, you've been around the horse. I mean, what are they talking about where he can intimidate the field? Just that's the presence that he had. When he's around the stables, it's almost like they're giving him the platform. I just thought that was interesting to hear all these descriptions about this horse. You've been around him. What are they talking about?
I'll tell you what. I saw a video the other day that was unbelievable. So Justify comes out of the horse van and arrives at Belmont Park for the first time, and they walk him into the barn, and he takes a loop around the area right outside all the stalls, which is called the shed row. And as he comes out, all the horses stick their heads out of their stalls and just, like, stare at him as he walks by. And they don't do that for any other horse. It was like, okay, the king is here. You know, everybody bow down. And I've never seen anything like it. The reactions, the stares as he goes by, you follow their heads as he walks by. I'm like, did that really happen? So he is just the ultimate alpha. You know, it's just an amazing thing to watch. And it was like a reverence from the other horses. And I couldn't believe it when I saw it. But I guess when you get out there on the track, there's that same feeling of, you know, I'm the one, and you better do something to you know, upset me. But he, man, not only is he huge, he's fast. You know, he's got that, and athletic. He's just got it all going for him.
Wow, that's awesome. That is a great story. So why, Larry, have we had this? I mean, we went almost 40 years without a Triple Crown winner, and I wasn't even sure we were ever going to see one again in our lifetime, and then American Pharoah did it 3 years ago. Now we've had two since 2015 in a short amount of time. Why has it happened in this short window?
Well, we saw the same thing back in the 70s, you know, when Secretariat won the Triple Crown in 73. They hadn't had one for 25 years, and he wins it. And then a few years later, 4 years later, Seattle Slew and Affirmed go back-to-back. And here we are after 37 years, and we're seeing it happen again. I think it's just the fact that you have to have a very, very special horse to do it. And American Pharoah was good enough to do it. Justify was good enough to do it. And we said coming into the Kentucky Derby, this was one of the deepest and strongest crop of horses we've seen in a long time. And usually when that happens, you're not going to get one of them to dominate them all, but he did. And he's just a very, very special horse. And I think that's the only explanation of why it's happened twice, two just superior animals.
You know, in other sports, Larry, we start talking about it, certain positions or whatever sport we're talking about. When you get to a certain age, it's like everybody's ready to put you out to pasture. Sorry for the pun there. But that's what we talk about in other sports. Like, oh, you can't keep doing it at this level, that age. I realize horse jockeys are different. But when you think about it, you're not supposed to do. When you look at the numbers and these successful jockeys, what they've done, the age where they've won big, huge races – it's not at age 52. Why has Mike Smith been able to do this at 52?
Well, first of all, you should see him when he goes to the gym. I mean, the man works so hard, it's unbelievable. He keeps himself in the physical condition of someone half his age, which I'm sure is one of the main reasons for that. The other reason is he's just so smart, and he's just one with a horse. He's been riding horses before he was ever walking, and you know, he knows exactly what he needs to do. Puts horses in the right position to win, and then has that physical ability to get the job done along with the horse. Obviously, you do have to have the right horse for the job, but you want the right jockey on it. And I'll tell you what, every time you can give me Mike Smith.
Well, while we're talking about that, let's talk about the other sort of mastermind behind this and Bob Baffert. What sets him apart as a trainer?
Well, you know, first of all, I'm sure he'll tell you he's been lucky to get some really good horses over the years, but he, again, is an absolute master at his craft. He started out as a quarter horse trainer, and he said that's all I wanted to do was, you know, train quarter horses in the Southwest, and all of a sudden he was starting to get some good thoroughbred horses, and he knew what to do with them. He, again, like Mike Smith, he's one with the horse. He knows how to get these horses ready for the big races. And, you know, I think a lot of it had to do with American Pharoah winning. He was able to see what worked with American Pharoah and say, well, let's kind of try to do the same thing here with Justify. And he kept his training patterns very similar to the two, and it worked for both of them. I think Bob is just, you know, just an absolute genius at training racehorses. And there's a lot of great trainers out there, but you know, he's the one right now. There's no doubt about it, and has been for years.
We're talking to Larry Comlis. We are talking about the Triple Crown, Justify's amazing performance at Belmont on Saturday. Larry, one thing that really impressed me, we had watched the Preakness, and we can think back, and Justify was able to hold off some of those hard-charging horses at the end, and you were thinking, well, with the longer track, would he be vulnerable there? And we saw Gronk's horse make a great run, and it was fun to watch Gronk's reaction there where he's watching his horse really move up from, like, last to second. And I was thinking, well, could this be it? Could he catch him? But Justify seemed to have another gear there. He didn't fade at all. He almost put it in another gear.
He did. And a lot of times when the race is a little bit longer, it's somewhat of an advantage to front-running horses because they're able to set an easier pace than they would in a shorter race and therefore save a little bit more in the tank. But we saw so many years where that was not the case. You have to have the special horse that has so many gears. And Mike said that in advance, that he's been amazed at how many gears that he has with Justify. He can shut him off and start him up again, and it's a lot of horses, you can't do that. But I'll tell you what, Gronkowski ran a tremendous race. He was so far behind early, and he made that giant run on the turn, and I think he's going to be a name to watch in the future for the rest of the racing season, and I'm looking forward to that for sure. He's a nice horse.
What was it like, almost, Larry, in front of 100,000 people and people just going nuts to see this happen, and as it started looking like it was going to become a reality down the stretch, what was that feeling like, the atmosphere?
The atmosphere was tremendous. We were saying all along during the week that it just wasn't quite the same buzz that we were hearing about it when American Pharoah won the Belmont Stakes, because it had just recently been done, and it just seemed as though people just weren't quite as into it this year. But I'll tell you what, I remember, like, an hour before the race, we had just run the race before the Belmont, and I said, and coming up next is the 150th Belmont Stakes, and you just heard this roar from the crowd, and for that next hour, it felt like American Pharoah again. Everybody, and you know the New Yorkers, they're all rowdy and making, you know, cheering, "Let's go Yankees." I'm a Red Sox fan. I didn't like that part, but anyway, the build up, it just kept going and going. And when those gates open, luckily I have headphones on when I'm calling the race with my own voice just cranked up loud, so, you know, you're not intimidated by hearing that crowd, but you could still sense that roar when the gates opened. And, man, as they turned for home, the building was shaking like it was for American Pharoah, and it was really something to be a part of.
Last thing, so what's next for Justify? I've seen reports that they said that he's going to keep racing, but when you won the Triple Crown and you've got a horse that you paid, what, $500,000 for, and now it's worth, I don't know, $75 million. What do you do if you're Justified the rest of your life?
Well, they've got some decisions to make, between all of the different owners of the horse and, of course, Bob Baffert. I think that they want to keep running him because it's great for the sport. And also, you know, he's just so good. Chances are he's going to just keep on winning. So, from what I read, that they're looking to give him a little bit of a break now and run him again in the late summer or early fall, and that's to be determined, and then hopefully make his way to the Breeders' Cup at the end of the year, which will be at Churchill Downs, where he's already won the Kentucky Derby. So I would think he might have a couple of more starts in him this year. That's what they did with American Pharoah. He had 3 starts after the Triple Crown, so we'll see, including a loss, by the way. So we'll see what ends up happening with Justify.
Let's end with some good news for you as a Red Sox fan. Nashville's own Mookie Betts, you're getting him back in the lineup. So that's good news for the Red Sox. He's coming back.
We need Mookie big time, man. We love Mookie. He's the catalyst for the team, and it's been a tough week without having him around the last couple. Luckily, I've been focused on the Triple Crown, and I haven't had to worry about it too much. But now I can go back to fretting every day as watching them and watching the Yankees play.
Yeah, and the other Nashvillean, David Price, got a win over the weekend too. So it was a good weekend for Nashville with the Red Sox. Hey,
perfect,
Larry.
Perfect.
Larry, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure, guys.
Larry Gomez, NBC Sports. He was on the call. Really cool stuff as Justify gets it done, becomes the 13th horse to win the Triple Crown. Back to wrap up the first hour next. Vanderbilt sports legends, they're heading back to their alma mater over on West End. and hit the field to support the YWCA's domestic violence services programs, including the Weaver Domestic Violence Center and the Amend Together Prevention Program. New England Patriots wide receiver and Vanderbilt alumnus Jordan Matthews, the fine wide receiver, will be hosting the second Vandy Legends charity game on July 7th, second annual, and that'll be on July 7th. The softball game features stars from the university's football, men's, and women's basketball and tennis programs. The roster includes Jordan Matthews, who I mentioned, Shane Foster, Jay Cutler, and many more. Gates will open at 4 p.m. with a home run derby following at 5 o'clock. First pitch thrown out will be at 6 o'clock at Hopkins Field with available parking. Very cool. Very, very cool. Speaking of that, did you see over the week, I think it was yesterday, the A's and Blue Jays game? Was it A's and Blue Jays, is that right?
Over the weekend?
Yeah.
It was the A's and the Royals.
Royals, sorry.
Yeah.
Wrong blue team. Blue and gray team. A's and Royals in Oakland.
I believe it was in Kansas
City.
Chad
Pender? No, I think it was.
It was in Kansas City.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Two strikes. Now you got two strikes on you.
Wow.
You're getting to Chad Pender, former Sound.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the Royals. Okay. I thought it was in Oakland. Well, there were a lot of A's fans when he caught it. Chad Pender fouled off two consecutive pitches, and the same fan made two unbelievable catches.
Did he really?
Yes. Like,
I didn't see that.
What are the odds? Like, how many people out there can say, I've caught two foul balls, and oh, by the way, they were consecutive pitches?
I've seen some fans
bare-handed, no glove, bare-handed.
I have seen the same fan catch two balls in the same game. I don't think I've ever seen two straight pitches. Two consecutive pitches?
Two consecutive pitches off Chad Pender's bat.
Holy cow.
Same guy, bare-handed, no glove, and he was an A's fan. He's got an A's hat, a shirt. Surrounded by A's fans, that's why I thought it was in Oakland. Doesn't look like it's in Kansas City. It looks like it's in Oakland. But nonetheless, consecutive pitches. Like, how cool is that? By the way, I'm going to look that. You look that up right now. I feel like I was right on that. It was in Oakland.
It was in Oakland.
Okay,
right.
So it was not strike two. Let's review that.
Only
there.
One strike.
Let's go back and review.
You had only one strike.
Okay. It was in Oakland. But how about that? Like, that guy will tell that story for the rest of his life. How cool. I'm not even sure I'd go back to another game. That's my walk-off.
That is one of the most enjoyable things about being a baseball fan over the summer is the wacky plays that happen. Like, the other day, the Mets, this is typical Mets, who are not having a lot go right, although they did win last night. But they left the bullpen door open. Did you see that? And the ball was hit right through the door.
No.
It went right into the bullpen because they left the door open in fair territory.
Whoops.
Whoops.
Tennessee Tech in Texas, down in Austin. Game three of that Super Regional. That will have a first pitch at noon today. So we will keep you posted. It's being shown on ESPN2.
That's going to be a great game.
Tennessee Tech won game one on Saturday, lost game two 4-2. Here's
they are
just
standing
a suggestion.
Toe to toe.
Here's a suggestion. I mean, I'm just throwing this out. Free advice to Matt Braga and the Golden Eagles. And they've been doing this. So this is – I'm trying to be funny. But also, when they have pitched to him, it's gone the wrong – don't pitch to Roger Clemens, this kid, okay? Just walk him. And by the way, can college baseball implement what the majors are doing now? Just go to first. Stop throwing out. Let's stop wasting time. Just go to first.
Honestly, I will go on the soapbox on this. College baseball is so great, and this is when it gets showcased. But also, it's showcasing the one thing they've got to fix. And we've been saying this for years. It's an entire thing. All levels of baseball need to pick up the pace of play. But there is no worse than college baseball. It's awful.
Yep.
and I don't want to put it all on Mississippi State, but the number of mound visits that just simply Dustin Skelton and Mississippi State should be responsible. We should call the Skelton rule, that you would implement the mound visits that Major League Baseball has done, which I think is working well. Just be conscious of how many times you're going out there. And not only going out there, but taking your sweet bleep time doing it. It was ridiculous how much time he was taking. I guarantee you, that game last night, think about the fans.
What did it go, 5 hours?
Well, but think about the fans. The fans get there for a 5 o'clock game.
Yeah.
They already have waited 2 hours for the game to start, and now you're watching an epic game. But it took 5 hours to play.
Yeah, just too much. Nobody can do that today.
But when you can do that, when you have things under your control, it's one thing if you're fouling off pitches and you're battling and there's comebacks. Nobody has a problem with that. That's what you're there for. You're not there to watch the catcher wait to the last possible second, then call time, take 3 steps out in front of the home plate, look around, and then give your first and third signs to your infield. It's first and third. You're a college player. You know the situation. Get out there, get your signs, and get back in there and catch. Let's go. You don't have to have 2 different meetings on the same batter with your pitcher. Get your signs and get the ball and throw. I honestly thought that added an hour of time. That catcher cost the game at least 30, I may be exaggerating a little bit, at least 30 minutes for each game. Unbelievable. And then you combine the manager coming out there as many times as he did. It was brutal. Yeah, brutal.
It is. There's a lot they could do to fix that. What you just said, there's a lot of walks, intentional walks, especially at this time of year.
Send them down
just
first.
Send them. Just go. Okay, do not waste time with throwing 4 pitches out. Send them to first to be done with it. Let's get going. And they have been. I'm going back to the Tennessee Tech. They've been walking Roger Clemens' kid a lot, but when they haven't, he has made them pay.
Yeah, he's played well.
What was he drafted in the 3rd round? Is he little? Why was he only drafted? Why was it 3rd round?
You'd have to ask the scouts.
Yeah, I don't know. Lefty.
I mean, I haven't watched him play that much. I know he's hot right now. It's just like that kid Mangum for Mississippi State, best player over the weekend. I mean, there were some candidates. A lot of people had their moments, but, man, he was a heck of a player. Made some great throws from center field, great catches, gap to gap, and then, you know, a great leadoff man, pesky player. Nobody drafted him?
No, he got drafted. He got drafted in the 32nd round.
32nd round?
Yeah, he just said he's staying. He's
coming back to school.
They knew he was staying.
Yeah.
He's
6'1", 185, has 3 home runs in college baseball. You know how outfielders nowadays in the bigs have to be able to mash, and he just can't do that.
Yeah.
But he can hit, so if you can hit, you'll be up there. But that's why he probably
he's got energy. Even next year,
he probably won't even be a top 10 round pick.
Yeah. I'd take that guy on my team, man.
Yeah.
That guy can play.
Heck yeah.
The college level, no doubt. We'll come back, Peter Burns, SEC Network, to kick off the second hour of Darren and Donick. But first, Willie's going to tell you about going to the lake.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we didn't get to go to the lake this weekend because I was at the baseball field for a lot of hours, and it was worth it. But as the summer goes on, we will be heading to the water very shortly. And if you love being on the lake, it's very simple. You're going to create these memories. If you've had that notion in your mind, well, you know, I don't want to invest in a boat or anything like that because it's just too much hassle. Well, let me present to you the Nashville Boat Club, because they take all the hassle away. When you're a member of the Nashville Boat Club, you make your reservation, you have lots of choices of what type of boat you want, and you have the convenience of showing up at the dock, hopping in the boat, and you're off and creating those fun times and adventures on the water. 232-9100. Call and schedule a tour. They have 4 different lakes that they operate out of. Percy Preak, if I can say it, I made a new word, a preak. Not a lake, not a creek, but a preak. No. Percy Priest Lake, Center Hill Lake, Old Hickory Lake, and now Tim's Ford, new this year. 12 years of service now for the Nashville Boat Club. 232-9100. Schedule a tour or go online at nashvilleboatclub.net. Don't buy a boat. Join the club.